Hello and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. It's good to see you. As always, you're welcome in my home. I have had to shut the cat in the other room because otherwise he would sit here and just howl all through the podcast. I don't know why. Maybe he doesn't like the fact that I'm not paying attention to him. If you listen very carefully, you may be able to hear him in the background, but really, don't pay attention to him. He is not the star of the show. I am! No, you are! No, the book is. I don't know who is the star anymore. Anyway, what to talk about this week? Well, I would like to thank myself for getting a Kindle. The Kindle is a little lifesaver. I was kind of a moron, and I left my Wheel of Time book at work when I wasn't going to get back to work for another couple days. So I grabbed my Kindle, and I downloaded the new book Mercury Falls by Rob Cruzzi, which is a very funny novel of the apocalypse, and it should show up here probably in the not-too-distant future. I enjoyed reading it, so thank you, Kindle. I really appreciate it. And what else? There was something else I wanted to say. Oh, that's right. Duh. For my American listeners, happy Thanksgiving. And let me just say, I'm very jealous of you. I have to admit, this is really the only season of the year where I do get awfully homesick. I mean, I miss my friends and my family all the time, certainly. But this time of year with the food, right? I can't get proper turkey and cranberry sauce and mashed potatoes and salad and all that good stuff, to say nothing of freshly baked apple pie and pumpkin pie with ice cream and whipped cream and the kind of dinner that makes you just want to go in the living room, undo the top button on your pants, and pass out. So happy birthday to you. I'll be here. I'll eat ramen. No. I can see you flinch. Don't worry about me. I'll be fine. Me with my ramen noodles. Maybe instant ramen, you know, just so I can say I've cooked something. So, really, this is not all about Thanksgiving. It's not a Thanksgiving podcast, blah, blah, blah. This is a book podcast. And last week I told you that this week is the Dresden Files. And I asked a question of you. I said, there are three Swords of the Cross in the Dresden Files universe. What are their names, and who is in possession of them at the moment? And I am sad to say that I got no takers on this one. Really, guys? Nothing? I mean, you could Google it. It is Googleable, and I'm going to trademark that word, and you owe me 5 cents if you use it, but it is Googleable. You can find out. I'll have to give you a slightly easier one next time. Anyway, the names of the swords are Amorakius, Fidelakius, and Esperakius. They are love, faith, and hope in that order. Currently, Harry is in possession of Amorakius and Fidelakius, and he is charged to hold on to them until he can find the proper bearer for these swords. The third one is held by Sanya, who is currently the only active Knight of the Cross. So there we go. I bring them up because they are key to this week's book, which is Death Masks by Jim Butcher, part of the Dresden Files. Hell's Bells count is 16. And there's a couple of editing errors in there. There's B-R-E-A-K for break, as in, you know, break your car. And shield was spelled S-H-I-E-L-F on page 319. I don't know why. I mean, really, it was the Hell's Bells that started it. I try not to notice spelling errors in books. I do anyway, because my job is to notice mistakes. They kind of jump out at me and dance around these days, but this is the only book where I actually make a note of the page. That's what they have me looking for. Anyway, on to the book. If you've been following the series this far, and you should have been, you know that Harry Dresden, wizard for hire, has really gotten himself into deep doo-doo by now. Aside from his usual problem of taking on cases in each book that end with him getting the ever-loving beat out of him, there's a larger story arc to take in. In this case, the war between the vampires of the Red Court and the White Council of Wizards, which, as much as he tried not to, Harry kind of sort of incited, and by all the ancient laws of not killing one's host at a party, he is definitely guilty of. To be fair, the host that he killed, Bianca, was trying to get him to break the rules of hospitality so she could kill him, because he made her so angry way back in Book 1, Stormfront, that she drained one of her favorite servants dry. It's a complicated world. So far, the book-level arcs and the series-level arc have been pretty distinct, although I suspect they'll become more and more intertwined as the series goes on. Sooner or later, they will merge, and all hell and its bells will break loose. I mean, literally, I have no doubt. So in this book, Harry has two major problems to deal with. The first one is a duel. The Red Court of Vampires really wants him dead, and they've sent one of their oldest and most powerful representatives, Don Paolo Ortega, to challenge him to a duel. To, of course, you know, the death, because that's how these things work. Harry certainly does not want to die, but the consequences of not dying might be even worse. Should Harry try to duck out of the duel, hired mercenaries are spread throughout Chicago, ready to take out everyone who means anything to Harry. Should Harry win, of course, the city will be declared neutral ground, and the vampire wizard war will have to rage on elsewhere. So overseeing all of this, this whole dueling situation, is the Archive, who is currently a 7-year-old girl who has the entire history of humanity. Every word that's ever been written, every word that's ever been spoken, in her head. She is a being of enormous power, and can be reduced to giggles by a cute little kitty cat. She and her bodyguard slash driver, Jared Kincaid, are there to see that the duel goes according to the rules, and they are ready to exact very harsh and very fatal punishment to he who violates them. So again, the White Council, who by all rights should be standing by one of their own, is secretly hoping that Ortega will take Dresden down. The wizards are losing the war to the vampires, and any excuse they can find to call a stop to the death and destruction is a welcome one. Trouble is, vampires may not want to stop, even if Dresden is dead. So in the other corner, Dresden has a paying job, one that is uniquely suited to him. Find a certain relic for the Vatican. The relic, of course, is priceless, as they all are. It is a length of linen cloth with a variety of stains and discolorations that may or may not have the imprint of the resurrected Jesus Christ burned into it. Yes, it is the Shroud of Turin, or as Harry would call it, the freaking Shroud of Turin. It is, of course, an immensely powerful artifact, regardless of whether or not it really is the burial shroud of Christ. You see, magic, as Harry tells us, is greatly about emotion and belief. If you want to do a spell, you have to really believe in that spell. You have to know down to your bones that it's going to work, or it won't work at all. It takes great hatred to make a voodoo doll work, for example, above and beyond the usual magical accoutrements that one needs. Millions of people believe in the divine nature of the shroud. That gives it power, which can be used for benevolent or, of course in this book, malevolent ends. This is where we meet some of the more dangerous foes in Dresden's universe, the Denarians. The Denarians, more formally known as the Order of the Blackened Denarius, are a group of fallen angels who are far, far nastier than the usual breed. There are 30 of them, each one bound to a coin, an ancient Roman denarius coin, which may or may not have been the silver coins paid to Judas for a simple kiss. When a human touches the coin, the fallen angel is able to make contact and enlist that human as a mortal carrier. Some of the denarians seduce their hosts, whereas others just use brute force to subjugate them. Either way, the Denarians are millennia old, nigh immortal, and evil down to their cores. The leader of these creatures calls himself Nicodemus, and he wants the shroud so that he can do terrible, terrible things to the world. Not to end it necessarily, but to bring about the kind of chaos, panic, and disorder that he and his kind thrive on. So fortunately, Harry has the aforementioned Knights of the Cross on his side. There is Michael, whom we have already met in a previous book, Sonia, and Shiro. The three of them are willing to fight the Denarians, but they want Harry out of it. Why? Well, our old friend the half-understood, vaguely worded prophecy, that's why, which, like so many other prophecies throughout history, should be regarded as highly suspect. There's a lot of layers to this story. We get a fun new group of bad guys to deal with, a better understanding of the war between the vampires and the wizards, and even another, more human look at John Marcone, the undisputed head of the Chicago underworld, who's also looking for the Shroud for slightly less nefarious purposes. Each book builds on the ones that came before it, yet each book lives on its own, which was a very good decision on Butcher's part. While you will certainly want to jump straight into the next book upon finishing this one, you don't actually need to, right? There's a certain amount of closure with just enough loose ends to fuel your speculation for the next book. Honestly, I shouldn't have to say this by now, but go get them. So let me give you a quote. This is a quote from Shiro, who is an older Japanese man and one of the Knights of the Cross, talking about the White Council of Wizards, who would probably disapprove of anything the Knights of the Cross do. And he says, "The council, arrogant, as if nothing significant could happen unless a wizard did it." There we go. That's Shiro in Death Masks. And, you know, he's probably right. You find a lot of these sort of specialty groups believe that nobody outside their group can do anything significant in their field, and they're often wrong. So there you go. I say that a lot, don't I? So there you go. The boyfriend noted that, except I usually say, "There we go." And he asked me, he was really bothering him for about 2 weeks. "What does it mean?" It turns out it doesn't mean anything. It's just a verbal filler. Everybody does it. Even famous podcasters like myself do it. So, well, what shall we do for next week then? After you have recovered from your turkey orgy and you have gone out and bought all your presents on Black Friday, and speaking as a former mall employee, let me just say, if you do go out on Black Friday, nobody working there likes you. Let me just tell you that right now. They smile, yes. They try to help you out, yes. But secretly, they hate you. I just thought you might want to know. So, once you're done with all that, you will, of course, come back next week for next week's podcast, so let me give you a clue to that. And we are going to stay in the interesting private detective realm. And next week's private detective uses a form of Zen navigation, as he calls it, which is to just find a car that looks like it knows where it's going and follow that. So tell me who that private detective is and the eponymous book that I'm going to do next week. Did that come out right? I think it did. All right. You know what I mean. There's your clue. Go get it. I expect a rush of replies. So, until then, stay well, have a nice week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelabyrinthlibrary.blogspot.com, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you'd like to recommend, I'd be happy to hear it. If you would like to send me some email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes or become a fan on Facebook. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week, and until then, keep reading.